From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host, filling in for Peter Sagal at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Adam Felber.
Thanks, Carl. This week, the Politico blog reported that John McCain's VP shortlist includes Romney, Ridge, and Portman, and others. Now, like many of you, we were surprised to learn that Natalie Portman is under consideration. And Senator McCain, we are all for it. Think of it. The youth vote, yours. The Jewish vote, yours. Is she qualified, you ask? I remind you, sir, that she served with distinction on the Imperial Senate. With Wookiees, sir! And you thought Harry Reid was hard to negotiate with. And more than that, the McCain-Portman ticket is the perfect choice to go up against the rumored fall juggernaut, Obama Lohan. If you think you've got the right combination, call us up and answer some questions about the week's news. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Now it is time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Emily Kuchar from Fresno, California.
Hello, Emily Kuchar. What do you do in Fresno, California?
I am a copy editor at our wonderful newspaper, the Fresno Bee.
You're a newspaper editor?
I'm a copy editor at the newspaper, yes.
Well, doesn't that kind of make you a ringer in this particular competition?
Well, it makes the stakes really high for me because I could lose my job if I don't answer these questions correctly.
Wow. Well, these are really hard questions this week. No, I'm kidding. You should. I'm guessing you might be okay. But to help you make it more okay, let me introduce you to our panel, Emily, okay?
Okay.
First up, say hello to writer and comedian Paul Provenza.
Hello, Emily. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Paul?
Good. And I happen to know that Fresno is the supplier of 48% of the world's raisins. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
That's fabulous. Yes, it's true.
See, she knows that because she's in news.
Right.
I know almost everything.
What?
Well, this will be a quick show for everybody.
And please say hello to deputy editor and blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Emily. I used to be a copy editor.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And now I'm the copy editor's boss, and I do know everything.
Oh.
And say hello to television personality and the man behind MoRocca180.com, Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Emily.
Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much.
You're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize, Carl's voice on your very own home answering machine.
I have to win this. Okay. I love Carl Castle.
Oh, wow. Even more important than your job.
Absolutely.
Okay, Emily, here's your first quote.
I would say that he is well equipped physically, mentally, and politically.
That was German Chancellor Angela Merkel getting sort of uncomfortably fulsome in her praise over what physically well-equipped visiting hunk of political manliness.
That would have to be the gorgeous Barack Obama.
Right! Ms. Merkel, who famously flinched at an unwelcome back rub from President George W. Bush, apparently feels a little bit differently about that tall drink of Wasser from the Democratic Party. And Merkel was not alone. Obama had them swooning from Baghdad to Berlin this week, flying around with General Petraeus and drawing rock star crowds. After charming King Abdullah of Jordan, he strolled straight across the Dead Sea and wowed him in the Holy Land. He felt the Palestinians' pain and genuflected like a mensch on the Western Wall. Extreme fawning reactions like Chancellor Merkel's were so common that you had to wonder who should be more concerned. John McCain or Michelle Obama?
I heard his speech on Thursday, and I thought the greatest line was, "Ich bin ein more popular than David Hasselhoff."
Yeah. It's weird, because in German, that translates to, I am a Krulla.
I'm a cheese day.
Yeah, exactly. German's a very complicated language. All right, Emily, your next quote is a series of jealous rants in the news this week.
Who does he think he is? Clay Aiken? The one went to Europe and homage must be paid. We have to fight for scraps from the table.
That wasn't a bunch of high school girls. It was, in fact, the resentful snarking of the spokespeople from whose campaign?
I'd have to assume that would be the McCain group.
You're right.
This wasn't a great week for the Republican maverick, whose media coverage basically amounted to those resentful mutterings and a few photos of the candidate riding not in a helicopter with General Petraeus, but in a golf cart with 84-year-old former President George H.W. Bush. McCain even managed to underscore his message of, I'm not getting any younger, by engaging in a string of gaffes, including another mention of the now-defunct Czechoslovakia and a reference to the non-existent Iraq-Pakistan border. He then spoke movingly about the need to improve U.S. relations with Narnia.
Is it true that when that while Obama was making his speech in Germany, that McCain was at a German restaurant
that
in
is
Ohio
true.
Or something?
That is true.
Is that right? I can't wait for his speech on immigration at Taco Bell. Or the global warming speech at Rainforest Cafe. Smart strategy. You save air. I hate traveling. You save overseas air travel. It's a more eco-friendly way
it
of,
sure
you know,
is, absolutely.
Of addressing these issues.
Okay, Emily, here is your next quote.
Sorry. Hello, Dolly.
That putatively amusing headline was thought up independently by several journalists this week as they put what they must have thought was their own unique spin on what story?
Wow. Can I get a little help?
Well, it was a big story in this week's news. It broke like something breaking on the shore, I suppose.
Oh, Hurricane Dolly.
Yes, exactly. Not since the first cloned sheep has the name of that beloved 1964 musical graced so many headlines. According to our Nexus count, fully 469 publications decided to run with that headline as of showtime. I would have gone with something like, I don't know, Dolly Starton.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I had another one. You know, if they were trying to shore up the bulwarks or something. Buttress Dolly.
Nice.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Carl, how did Emily do?
Well, Adam, Emily had three correct answers, so Emily, you win our prize.
Yay!
Emily, you get to keep your job, you get Carl Castle's voice on your answering machine, a banner show for you, I would say, and thank you so much for playing.
Thank you so much.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri, a researcher in Philadelphia, has found that contrary to popular belief, old people do not, in fact, have their own what?
Old people do not have their own... They don't have their own language. They don't have their own...
No. There's no such thing as oldies, if that's what you're saying.
Old people don't have their own...
I'll give you a hint. If this is true, there must be a Chanel product out there that has a hint of cough drops.
Oh, smell!
Vicks Vapor Rub, yes. Smell. It is scientific. Individual old people might smell, but they can't blame it on their age. Not anymore. According to research, there's no such thing as old people odor, which has been historically described as a mixture of mothballs, English toffees, Ben Gay, talcum powder, and John McCain. Sensory expert Greg Pretty collected sweat from old people and young people.
Oh!
And concluded that old people's sweat doesn't really smell much different than sweat from young people. Surprisingly, though, Pretty did find a gland in old people that secretes a fluid that makes you drive for miles with your turn signal on.
You know,
was he collecting this sweat as part of a study, or he just happened to be doing it?
I think somebody at the university was like, oh, I need to do this study. And he was like, well, I've got this sweat.
Somebody told me that the Queen Mother smelled really nice. I heard that.
Who? She smells like success.
No, because...
I mean, I don't...
Success by the Queen Mother.
By the Queen
Available
Mother.
Available now. That's great. I love this. No, I heard because I used to... because I was a spritzer at Macy's, and I was a spritzed Chanel, and for every number of Chanel, there was a different sort of person that you would say... So, like Chanel number 5 is what your French teacher smelled like, but Chanel number 22, which smelled like lilies, they used to say, that's what the Queen Mother smells like. So we were supposed to say that to people. Like, so you'd spray, and then she'd say, oh, that's really nice. And I said, yes, that's like the Queen Mother. Oh. And that was supposed to be appealing.
Did the Queen Mother smell like Chanel number 2, or did the Chanel number 2 smell like the Queen
Chanel
Mother?
Chanel number 22. I think what it is that the Queen Mother wore Chanel number 22.
Oh.
That's why.
It's kind of a chicken and egg question there, isn't it?
Right. It wasn't a distilled
essence. No, they actually got it off of her. They would go there with the bottles.
So apparently there's a rich history of collecting old people's sweat.
Yeah. They would the butler would sponge her every morning.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is CJ in Waco, Texas.
Hi, CJ. What's up in Waco?
Well, it's hot.
Yeah, yeah. It's a side effect of Texas in summer, I think.
It happens.
And what do you do there?
I do communications and marketing for a business school.
Oh, big business school?
Baylor University.
That's a big business school.
Go Baylor Bears.
Pick 'em.
Well, CJ, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. What's the topic, Carl?
Let me assure you that my days with the Randy Chaps All Mail Review will have no effect on my work as a newscaster.
Well, Carl, like a lot of us, know the perils of past deeds messing up your current gig. This week, we read about someone whose job was threatened by things they thought were dead and buried. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories about the past coming back to haunt. Pick the real one, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Are you ready, CJ?
I am ready.
First up, it's Paul Provenza.
Alice Sinclair is retiring from her 50-year career as a teacher and administrator at London's internationally renowned Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. She's written a book about some of her illustrious students over the decades, which include acting greats such as Sir Ian McKellen and Dame Judi Dench. One chapter examines some less than stellar encounters with talent, most notably a young wannabe actor who failed 8 consecutive auditions for a place at the Academy, his last ending in a rageful tantrum. You people know nothing about talent, screamed the young Simon Cowell. As he was being escorted out of the audition, he continued, you are all arrogant know-nothings, and someday I will show you all. The book includes notes written by the auditors on his performances, including comments like, refreshingly talent-free. He has the charisma of a narcoleptic slug. And the only Shakespearean role he would be cast in is Yorick. A publicist for Simon Cowell denied that the American Idol judge ever aspired to a career as a classically trained actor. Miss Sinclair responded simply, next.
Simon Cowell turning out to have a real axe to grind. Your next story of someone looking back with regret comes from Mo Rocca.
Rapper Rick Ross proudly touts his past as a Miami gangster and big-time cocaine dealer. What doesn't appear on this rapper's rap sheet is the 18 months he did in the slammer as a corrections officer. According to The Smoking Gun, Ross was a prison guard beginning in December 1995 at a very unblingy salary of $22,000. A past as a corrections officer is hardly the cred the man behind hits like Hustlin' and Push It needs. So is Ross one mother fudging his resume? Ross claims that photos showing him in prison guard uniform are the work of online hackers. Rick Ross thinks that he's the next hammer, but we know what he did when he was in the slammer. Other guys wore cuffs while he held the key. Who's harder core? I'll tell you, me.
The rapper was a screw from Mo Rocca. Your last story of the past rearing its ugly head comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Everyone in Canada knows Catherine Dallenbeck, host of the popular cooking show The Art of the French Table. And everyone remembers Cat Tisdale, the late 80s feminist performance artist whose wild and bawdy routine involved at one point having audience members eat pimento loaf and liverwurst off her naked torso. But until a Toronto blogger unearthed proof last week, nobody knew the French chef and the naked crazy woman were the same person. Dahlenbeck, now a pert middle-aged blonde with a rich French husband and a mean whisk, said she never tried to hide her past and isn't the slightest bit ashamed. They were different times and I was angrier, she says now. Producers wouldn't comment on rumors she's hoping to recreate a PG-13 version of her old act on a future show, this time with a bustier, garter belt, and a layer of excellent pâté de campagne.
All right, CJ, let's review. You've got Simon Cowell's shameful audition, a gangster rapper who jailed gangsters, and a formerly salacious chef. Which one is the real story?
I'm so bad at this game. I get it wrong every week.
Oh, America's bad at this game.
I'm going to say the rapper.
The rapper. Something about Mo Rocca's story seemed...
It was my rap.
It was his rap. I think so. To find out the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
In the photograph, the individual was shaking hands with our regional director in South Florida at a correctional officer graduation. So we identified the photograph as William Leonard Welch.
That was Joellen Ratcliffe, who works in public affairs for the state of Florida, describing a photograph allegedly showing the rapper Rick Ross, whose real name is William Leonard Roberts, at a prison officer graduation ceremony. Congratulations, CJ, you got it right.
Yay!
You earned a point for Mo Hardcore Rocca, and you've even won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your answering machine.
I am psyched. That is awesome.
I'm psyched, you're psyched. And Mo, that was some terrific rapping.
Yeah. She's gone wacky in Waco.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for playing with us today, CJ.
Thank you.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.
Promise not to tell. Whoa, whoa, closer.
And now the part of our show where we ask people who've accomplished great things silly questions to bring them down to our level. When people start tossing around terms like double and triple threat and then have to start dredging up words like polymath, they are likely referring to Peter Bogdanovich. An established film journalist and scholar, Bogdanovich turned to writing and directing movies in the late 60s, bringing us such classics as Paper Moon and The Last Picture Show, which is on the AFI's list of the top 100 films of all time. He's published 14 books, and his career as an actor extends to his role as Dr. Elliot Kupferberg, the analyst's analyst on The Sopranos. And in some spare time, he recently recorded an album of himself singing standards. Peter Bogdanovich, you can now add silly radio news quizzes to your resume. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to meet you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Now, you exploded onto the scene in the 1970s. How was it? How was coping with that success so early?
It's very, very uncomfortable because you don't know what's happening. I mean, you're used to failure. Suddenly something else is going on. You don't quite know what it is. They tell you it's success, but there's no handbook of how to handle it.
So what did you find yourself doing?
Mistakes.
Right.
I was also going with Sybil Shepherd at the time, which was much commented on.
Right. Made the news a bit, did it?
Yeah, because we were living together and we weren't married. And in that time, believe it or not, that was shocking still. Can you believe that?
It is shocking. I'm a little shocked. But tell me, was that before or after she dated Elvis? Or did she, in fact, date Elvis?
No, she dated Elvis while she was going with me.
What?
And how come that movie never got made?
Well, you know, the thing is, it didn't have a happy ending for Elvis because she chose me.
Yay!
Wow.
Oh, that had to feel great.
We had a bit of an argument about it once or twice, but it turned out all right.
You and Elvis did, or you and Sybil did?
No, I never met Elvis.
Oh.
Though he did come to see her one time when downstairs at the apartment building where we were living. which she described in her autobiography. I had no idea it had happened until I read it 30 years later.
Wow.
Memo to self, get that autobiography.
But anyway, I was going to tell you that during the 70s, during all this success and living with Sybil and so on, we ended up getting very bad press in the middle of the decade.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very bad. And Cary Grant, who was a friend of mine, called me up and he says, Peter, will you for God's sake stop telling people you're happy? And stop telling them you're in love.
Probably good advice.
I said, why, Cary? Because they're not happy and they're not in love.
Oh, that's tremendous dialogue right there.
I said, I thought the whole world loves a lover. No, don't you believe it.
Now, about the early 70s, I read that you had a chance to direct The Godfather, as did several other of your contemporaries, and you passed.
Well, that's a funny story, because I didn't even know I was turning down The Godfather.
Oh, really?
I didn't find that out for 10 years later. when Robert Evans, who was the head of the studio, said, you turned down The Godfather. I said, I never turned down The Godfather. He said, yes, you did. You were the first person we offered it to. Oh, I said, oh, that was the time the guy called me and said, we're interested in you directing a mafia book. And I said, I'm not interested in the mafia. And that was the end of that.
that was that. Now, oddly, a decade or so later, two decades later, you find yourself on The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And you directed at least an episode of that, didn't you?
I did, yeah, and I was on it for 6 years. That was such fun.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Now you must pretty much take anything involving the mafia. You don't want to pass that.
That's funny. That's right, mafia, I'm there.
Let's talk about The Sopranos for a second. You've been in the business a long time. What would you attribute the massive success of that show to?
Well, I was just honored to be in it because it was such good material. You don't get that very often. Such a good cast, such good directors, and such great writing. But I think really it demystified the mafia. I think people said it was in the tradition of Coppola's pictures and Scorsese, but I disagree. I think it was exactly the opposite. It was, I mean, these people had kids who went to school and they had mundane concerns like the laundry. I mean, it was about people, and they happened to be in the mafia.
You're right, and there's very little laundry stuff going on in The Godfather. There's a horse head in my bed. How am I going to get this stain out?
Vinny, Tony, bust that stain out!
Now, moving from television history to recording history, you've recently recorded an album of standards.
Oh, that's a footnote.
Well, it's a footnote I want to talk about for a second. Would you consider this more in the tradition of a Bernadette Peters and Bette Midler album of standards?
No.
More like a William Shatner thing, or somewhere in between?
How about Rod Stewart right in between?
Yeah, right at the Rod Stewart level.
Well, I don't have a big orchestra like Rod Stewart. I just have a piano. And we just did it for fun, you know. And I don't know that anybody... There might be burnings of it somewhere, but...
Any Elvis standards in there? Blue Hawaii, come on.
Make the world go away.
Well, Peter Bogdanovich, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You mean it's not named after Thomas Crapper after all?
That's right. We walk through our days using all kinds of common words and phrases without any idea what they mean. For example, when someone says something as easy as shooting fish in a barrel, it's because in the old days, fishing was really easy because fish lived in barrels and all you had to do was shoot. I don't know. But in any case, we're going to ask you three questions about the origins of words taken from the book I Didn't Know That. Get two right and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Peter Bogdanovich playing for?
Peter is playing for Natalie Channon of Florence, Alabama.
All right, Peter,
well,
are you ready?
Natalie, I'm sorry. I'm not brilliant at this sort of thing.
Okay, first question. Your first word, to nag. Where does that come from? Is it A, from the term for an old horse, implying somebody who constantly whinnies? B, from the Scandinavian term used to describe the sound of rats gnawing on your roof? Or C, from a 19th century British politician, Frederick C. Nagel, who is known for lecturing opponents on their flaws?
Boy, that's not easy.
No.
I'll just go with a thought. Maybe it's three, the third one.
The Frederick C. Nagel.
Yeah.
All right, B is your answer. C is your answer. I'm sorry, the answer is B. Scandinavian term.
Yes. That is my second choice.
Well, yeah. During the Middle Ages, people who lived in houses with thatched roofs, which is everybody, had to endure the sound of rats chewing on their houses all night. The Scandinavians called that nagging.
I thought that Scandinavian rats went, nagga, 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 nagga.
I'm sure they do. Nag.
Yes, with a little circle over the A.
All right, there are still chances here. Next question, the expression Charlie horse, referring to a pain or pulled muscle in the leg. Is the term derived from A, the French King Charles, referring to the 17th century French monarch who limped? B, an actual famous horse named Charlie who limped? Or C, an anatomical term, charahortix, referring to the muscle directly behind the kneecap, causing a limp?
Wow, I don't know. I'm going to guess three again.
You're going to go with C, an anatomical term, charahortix. Well, I would have guessed that one, too. But I'm sorry, the answer was B. Charlie was a horse that used to work at Chicago's White Sox baseball park, and being old, he limped. Yes, right here in Chicago. Pretty soon, players who limped were called old Charlie horses. And then the limp itself got that name.
That's so much more interesting than C.
Yeah, I have to say it is. All right, let's move on to our last question. To eat humble pie, where does that phrase come from? Is it A, pies used to be considered to have magical properties. If you ate a rabbit pie, you'd be fruitful. If you ate ox pie, you'd be strong. So eating humble pie makes you humble. Is it B, it's actually umble pie. Umble being the intestines of a deer, left over from the good stuff. So, to eat humble pie is to be cast down low. Or is it C? There was a baker in 17th century London named Humble who was notorious for his terrible pies. So if you were reduced to eating his stuff, you knew you were out of luck.
These are very fun.
I don't know what to pick.
I don't either, and I'm staring at the answer.
I love that deer pie. It's funny.
Well, I have no idea. I would guess. I'm just going to guess the first one because it probably isn't that, and I want to be consistent.
Right. So you're going to go with magical pies?
Yeah, magical pies. What the hell?
I'm sorry. The answer was B. Yeah. Umble is the nasty bits of a deer.
Ew.
That's what's called a strikeout.
That's okay. That's why we call this game Not My Job. Carl, how did Peter Bogdanovich do?
Peter's a great director. When he put it right, he struck out. No correct answers, so no prize for Natalie Channon.
Natalie, forgive me.
Oh,
when Elvis played this game, he won.
Peter Bogdanovich is a director, writer, and actor. He directed the acclaimed film The Last Picture Show, and he recently appeared as a psychiatrist on The Sopranos. You can see him in the new movies The Doorman and Humboldt County. Peter Bogdanovich, thank you so much for joining
Adam,
us tonight.
Adam, thanks so much for having me. It's been fun.
In just a minute, Carl offers the news in rhyming verse in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from this week's news. Kiri, this week, former Bosnian leader Radovan Karadzic was caught by Serbian police after spending the last 13 years in disguise and on the lam. During his years evading police, Karadzic, who will be tried at The Hague for war crimes, was so thoroughly convinced of his disguise's efficacy that he regularly spent his time doing what?
Walking around town and going to restaurants?
I assume that he did that, but I'm thinking more of a vocation than a hobby.
Oh, he was like a naturalistic healer guy.
Yes, right.
Yes.
He was practicing alternative medicine. Karadzic was apparently content to spend his post-war crime years as a berry-eating, aura-cleansing health guru. He grew a beard that would make Dr. Andrew Weil blush, and even wrote a column for Serbia's Healthy Life magazine. This international criminal as alternative medic isn't as unusual as you might think. Historians will remember Adolf Eichmann's apprehension while running a small herbal tea company, or the day in 2005 when Osama bin Laden was almost nabbed while managing an aromatherapy boutique. Mo, this week it was reported that a water slide in Hershey, Pennsylvania won't just provide you with splashing and thrills, it might also what?
It'll provide you with thrill. What did you say? Not only will it provide you with splashes and thrills,
but it will also do what to you?
It will make your skin pruney.
I have a hint.
Yes, please.
Okay. usually, the copper-toned dog is responsible for this.
It'll also give you the opposite of a wedgie. It'll pull your shorts off.
It'll remove your bathing suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. The Wave Rider. A boogie board ride down a two-lane slide accompanied by jets of water shooting up inclines is a more than occasional creator of unintentional indecency. According to one source, approximately one in five riders lose tops and bottoms and sometimes both. Lifeguards are compelled to stand at the ready with towels to help riders cover up what the slide has uncovered. The ride is thought to be the biggest theme park threat to decency since Universal Studios' short-lived Tunnel of Ethnic Slurs.
Do they charge people to ride this ride or just to watch people ride the ride?
It's kind of shocking. I mean, the stat that really jumped out at us was that one in five, that's 20% of the people on there, lose some part of their bathing suit.
That is amazing.
And that's a lot of lifeguards standing there with towels helping the young and the old.
That's a lot of middle school boys standing around the edge.
All right. Paul, a driver in Murray, Utah, got angry and drew a gun when another motorist got him to roll down his window and asked him what?
Do you have a gun?
Well, no. Apparently in Utah, their TVs are just now broadcasting commercials from the late 80s.
Oh, I love this. I mean, I literally do love it, actually, to eat it.
This guy rolls up to a stoplight.
Do you have any Grey Poupon?
Yes, right.
I got to tell you.
Yeah.
That was just as random, even with the hint.
Yes. Yes, it was, excuse me, sir, do you have any Grey Poupon? The man, realizing he was being played for a Dijon-loving fool, pulled out a handgun and responded, here's your Grey Poupon, roll your bleeping windows up. The angry driver was eventually charged with aggravated assault. The Grey Poupon pranksters were renditioned and then sent to Gitmo, where interrogators will continuously ask for mustard and demand to know the location of the beef. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait swag. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Joe Shaw from Rapid River, Michigan.
Hi, Joe. What do you do there in Rapid River?
I am a math instructor at a local college.
Really? Well, what kind of math? What flavor of math are you teaching these days?
Algebra and statistics.
Ah, the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you.
Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two limericks, you're a winner. Here is your first limerick.
I remember I once was a slim lass. Now I see my youth as through a dim glass. At my age, I feel free to bring back P.E. with a workout that's like my old...
class?
Halfway there. You'll want to...
Gym class?
Yes, right. Who hasn't gotten nostalgic for those old days of P.E.? The big dodgeball bruises and bloody noses and getting smacked with a towel? Good times. Well, now, programs like Old School P.E. in New Hampshire and Urban Recess in Oregon are cashing in on that nostalgia with their adult P.E. classes. They've been pretty successful, but organizers admit that there have been some glitches. Urban Recess has had to segregate their classes by gender because, quote, girls were getting their eyes poked out or boobs grabbed because guys were so competitive about it. But there's still fun galore, and one participant said, we really just joke and have a good time all night and pick on each other and laugh. NPR listeners are encouraged to relive their best PE memories by signing up, pretending to have forgotten their gym shorts, and going to the library instead.
The worst idea ever.
It's surprising, isn't it?
It's unbelievable that anyone would ever go back to gym class.
It's for a lot cheaper than a gymnasium membership.
But the therapist costs a boatload. Horrible. Horrible thing.
All right, Joe, here's your next limerick.
Have your kids become overweight bums? Make them use their opposable thumbs. Give them sticks to get thin while they're beating some skins. It's a workout to rock out on...
drums.
Right. Anyone who has seen photos of Phil Collins at the beach will not be surprised to learn that drummers are the rock world's Iron Men. According to researcher Dr. Marcus Smith of England's Chichester University, rock and roll drummers have just as much physical prowess as top soccer and football players. Drumming takes extraordinary stamina, and during performance, drummers have heart rates comparable to elite athletes. And just like professional athletes, drummers have what it takes to regularly fail blood tests. Well, Joe, here's your last limerick.
Since it's dead skin that we like to eat, we carp are a cleanup elite. Stick your legs in our tank. No, this isn't a prank. We'll eat calluses off of your
feet.
Right.
I love this story.
Sure. You want a pedicure. Who doesn't want a pedicure? But people touching your feet is gross. You need the kind of clean, refined treatment that you can only get from a fish's mouth. Yes, fish pedicures are the latest craze in an Alexandria, Virginia spa, where special Gararufa fish snack their days away on the crusty, gnarled feet of spa patrons. And since the fish don't have any teeth, they can't snack on live cells, stripping your feet of unwanted dead cells while letting you keep your actual feet. A typical fish pedicure takes about 15 to 30 minutes or 3 to 4 hours if you're Larry King.
And if your feet have a lot of dead skin, those fish will sing. I mean, they really, you know, they'll sing out. I saw the news report on this. It was hilarious, actually.
How do you think they arrived at that particular fish? Like, did they go through, like, okay, piranha? No. Not working. Let's go with the guppies.
Carl, how did Joe do?
Well, Joe had three correct answers. So, Joe, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Congratulations, Joe.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing our game.
It's fun.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Popsicle toes. You're so brave to expose all those popsicle toes.
Now onto our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor has the lead, Adam. He has 4 points. Morocco has 3. Paul Provenza has 2.
All right. Paul, you're in third place, so you're up first.
Okie dokie.
The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in la blank. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal this week said that he would not accept an invitation from blank to
John
be
McCain.
Vice president. Right. The head of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute has warned his staff to limit blank use
cell
because
phones.
Of possible cancer risks. Right. In a perceived retaliation, a reporter for The New Yorker was denied a seat on blank's plane to the Mideast this week.
Obama.
Right. A judge in New Zealand ruled that a girl named blank should be allowed to change her name.
Britney Spears.
No. Tallulah does the hula. NBC announced that Friday, May 29th, 2009, will be blank's last night on The Tonight Show.
Jay Leno.
Right. The world's first blank baby turned 30 on Friday.
Test tube baby.
Right. At a meeting in London, security officials stopped a man who approached Prime Minister Gordon Brown and tried to blank.
Glue himself to him.
Right.
Woo!
Not since a woman tried to lace her boots to Neville Chamberlain's mustache has England faced such an incident of attempted ministerial adhesion. On Tuesday, Dan Glass smuggled a tiny container of superglue into number 10 Downing Street, dabbed a bit on his hand, and then reached out to shake Gordon Brown's hand. I just glued myself to him, and after 20 seconds, he tore my hand off. It really hurt, said Glass. Given the Prime Minister's positively Bush-like unpopularity in Britain, Mr. Glass might turn out to be his last adherent.
Oh, there you go. That's great.
Carl, how did Paul do?
Paul had 6 correct answers, Adam, for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Paul has the lead.
Nice round, Paul. Okay, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. The FDA announced that they have directly linked jalapeno peppers tainted with blank to a produce warehouse in Texas.
Salmonella.
Right. Former Golden Girl blank died this week at age 85.
Estelle Getty.
Right. In the largest study of its kind, boys and girls from 2nd through 11th grade were found to have equal blank skills.
Spelling?
Math. A Canadian woman filed a complaint against a transit company because they said her blank wasn't the same as an assistant guide dog.
Her, it was a kangaroo with a leash?
Assistant's ferret.
Close enough.
Yeah. Batman star blank was arrested in London this week for allegedly assaulting his mother and sister.
Christian Bale.
Right. Forgoing his traditional outfit of dolphin shorts and a tank top, blank testified before Congress about physical education.
Richard Simmons.
Right. To avoid an uncomfortable conversation with his wife, a man in Kolkata, India, took a blank to court to get a divorce.
Cow?
A wife impersonator. Yes, he brought a fake wife. Sanjeev Saha wanted to get a divorce, but he didn't want the hassle of convincing his real wife to go to court. So he brought in another woman who pretended to be his wife and agreed to a mutual divorce. Then he went home, broke the news to his real wife, and told her to clear out. The wife, understandably upset, has appealed the ruling and had the divorce suspended, which has made Saha very upset since his wedding to a stand-in for Angelina Jolie is scheduled for Monday. Carl, how did Mo do?
Mo had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11. But Paul Provenza still has the lead with 14 points.
And Carl, how many does Kiri need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
All right, Kiri, this is for the game.
Okay.
Fill in the blank. A federal appeals court tossed out an indecency fine against CBS for the infamous blank incident from the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show.
Wardrobe malfunction.
Right. Just 2 weeks before the start of the blanks, swimmer Jessica Hardy tested positive for a banned substance.
Olympics.
Right. Disney announced that Ebert and Roper will continue even though blank and blank are leaving the show.
Ebert and Roper.
Right. Senator Larry Craig gave a Senate speech saying that the U.S. can't continue to let foreign dictators blank.
Tell us what to do?
Jerk us around by the gas nozzle.
Oh, he didn't.
He did.
Oh, my gosh.
When a traditional scarecrow failed to scare away birds, a British farmer found success using a scarecrow made to look blank.
Like his wife?
Like Amy Winehouse.
Oh!
David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson made their long-awaited return as Mulder and Scully this weekend in the second blank movie.
X-Files.
Right. Democratic Congressman Charlie Rangel shocked his colleagues by filing an ethics complaint against blank.
Barack Obama.
No, himself.
Oh!
Two men were arrested for stealing bedding from a Seattle department store after police caught them behind the store blanking.
Sleeping.
Yes, taking a nap on the stolen merchandise. It wasn't hard to figure out who had stolen the bedding from the Fred Meyer store. They just followed the trail of pillows behind the store, where they found one thief asleep on a pile of pillows and the other curled up in a stolen hammock. Police had a lot of fun taking photos of the sleeping thieves before waking them up by sticking their hands in bowls of warm water. Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win?
She needed at least 5 to tie, and she had 5 correct answers. So with 14 points, Paul Provenza and Kiri O'Connor are this week's co-champions.
Woohoo! Congratulations. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, how will John McCain regain his mojo after sitting in the shadow of Obama mania all week? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. And the Gruber Family Foundation for support of NPR's international coverage. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth, Emily Ecton, and Joe Feldman. Now, panel, how will McCain top Obama's trip overseas? Paul Provenza.
He's going to move the timeline of Obama's trip and claim it happened after the voter surge.
Kiri O'Connor.
John McCain's going to tie a whole lot of balloons to an aluminum lawn chair and do a floating tour of America.
And Mo Rocca.
He'll make his own grand tour of Europe through Busch Gardens, the old country.
Well, if John McCain does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Provenza, Kiri O'Connor, and Mo Rocca. And thanks to you all for listening. I'm Adam Felber. Peter Sagal will be back next week, and we'll see you then. This is NPR, National Public Radio.